Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
My name is Joseph Perlikowski. I'm the ABMS Program Manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. I'd like to welcome all of you to our ISO 37001 webinar. Our presentation for today is going to address a number of items. We're going to take a deep dive into what 37001 is, where it came from, its development, a little bit about why it was developed. We'll break down the 37001 standard into its three main provisions. Those are prevention, detection, and response. We'll talk a little bit about the benefits of certification to ISO 37001, a few concluding remarks, and then your questions. ISO 37001 is an ISO published standard, obviously, and it was written for the topic of bribery. Now, its official title is Anti-Bribery Management Systems, Requirements with Guidance for Use. So we refer to it as ABMS for short. Now, in terms of what is bribery, the term bribery has different legal definitions. This has bearing on legal local laws, local statutes, but they did make an attempt to provide a binding definition within the 37001 standard itself. So it's been defined as offering, promising, giving, accepting, or soliciting of an undue advantage of any value, and they emphasize that of course could be financial or non-financial, directly or indirectly and irrespective of location, in violation of applicable law, as an inducement or reward for a person acting or refraining from acting in relation to the performance of that person's duties. And that definition is found in the 37001 standard under clause 3.1. Now, in terms of what was the motivation for writing an ABMS standard, bribery obviously is an ugly practice, and it undermines the trustworthiness, not just of organizations, but even industries or whole regions. So if a person or a region or a company is suspected of being involved in a bribery incident, that can obviously greatly affect their ability to be considered for bidding on future business. It may even lead to the company folding if they're not able to hang on to current business. So it was thought that there needed to be a mutually respected standard for combating battery to help organizations shake that type of reputation if they are unlucky enough to be in that type of situation. Now, this actually has quite a history in terms of various groups, some governmental, some non-governmental, providing guidelines or resources for bribery management, going all the way back to 1977 with the Federal Corrupt Practices Act. Transparency International, whose activity has a great deal of bearing in the work that we do here at PJR. They were founded in 1993. Some of you may remember when the Sarbanes-Oxley Act was passed here in the United States back in 2002. The UK had its Anti-Bribery Act passed in 2010 and followed shortly thereafter by British Standard 10500, which was issued in 2011. That document actually was a significant contributor to what became the ISO 37001 standard that we have today. ISO 37001 went through the standard protocol that ISO has for the development of a standard. To begin with, it was given to a committee in this case, ISO Project Committee 278. They began their work back in February 2014, and the usual path was followed. They had a committee draft in the fall of that year, and then in rather rapid succession, the draft standard was published the following year, and the final draft standard in the fall of 2016, which very shortly gave way to ISO 37001 being published on October 13th of 2016. Now, at this point, it's possible that the standard will be up for revision. The ISO is supposed to look at standards every 5 years. We're not anticipating any major changes to ISO 37001, but obviously we will keep an eye on that and update our audit process as needed. Now, like every other ISO published standard, going back to 2012 at least, ISO 37001 is rooted in Annex SL. Now, you've probably heard of Annex SL if you're already, for example, ISO 9001 certified. We've talked about it extensively on our ISO 9001 webinar series. Annex SL goes all the way back to 2012, and you can think of it as a 10-section blueprint for authoring all of the ISO family of standards. They all have this same 10-section structure. So what that means, why that matters, is that if you have implemented any Annex SL rooted standard within the past few years, you should be able to add ISO 37001 to your certification portfolio with relative ease. So obviously that includes ISO 9001, but it also includes standards like ISO 14001, ISO 45001, and even several non-ISO standards. For example, TL for telecommunications, ITF for the automotive industry, and AS 9100 for the aerospace industry. These are not ISO standards, but they're rooted in that same Annex SL framework, that same 10-section framework. So if you already have one of those systems within your organization, you're going to find a lot of common requirements between those standards and ISO 37001. ISO 37001 has requirements for familiar things like management review, internal audit, corrective action, competency, and so forth. So any existing programs that you have in place for those requirements can be brought to bear in the implementation of an ISO 37001 anti-bribery management system. So as I mentioned earlier, you can think of ISO 37001 as kind of a three-part play, if you will, in terms of how the actual bribery management activity works. And it's broken down as prevention, detection, response. So let's start with prevention. This is obviously the ideal state for an organization. And so the bulk of the requirements in 37001 focus on prevention. Obviously, that's far better than having to worry about responding. And the principal requirement, the lead-in requirement, is bribery risk assessments. This is an activity that's discussed in section 4.5. And these are supposed to be done on a regular basis. And they're supposed to serve as a means to evaluate current and potential bribery risks. And you're supposed to have records of these. You're supposed to have an anti-bribery policy. If you have, for example, a quality policy under ISO 9001, this is a similar concept, except it's rooted in bribery. This is supposed to be a statement from the management of the organization. It's meant to be kind of a strong stance on bribery, and it needs to be shared with the entire organization. This is something that needs to be kind of broadcast and very much something that people are aware of within the organization. Prevention controls include the anti-bribery compliance function. This is discussed in section 5.3.2. Now, this is a group of people typically, and they are going to be tasked with things like developing the system, making sure it's deployed, making sure that they are reporting on the effectiveness of the ABMS, and that function, that group, they have to be staffed with people that are both, and this is key, empowered and independent. So that this can't just be lower level employees. These need to be people that are reasonably positioned within the company that they can make policy decisions. That's key. Another key prevention requirement is related to competence, and they call it employment awareness and training. This is in section 7.2. This is actually, in terms of a number of words even, it's one of the more extensive and prescriptive of the requirements. They talk about things like screening requirements, having whistleblower protections, reviewing performance bonuses, and mandatory bribery training. So it's a very extensive set of requirements that need to be fulfilled. Due diligence is discussed in section 8.2. It indicates that there needs to be investigations performed in relation to pending transactions, pending projects, etc., if a bribery risk is identified. Financial and non-financial controls are discussed in Section 8.3 and in Section 8.4. Now, there's a lot of guidance on this, these two items in Annex A. We're going to be talking about Annex A in a few minutes here. This is a very wide-ranging set of requirements, and it covers potential controls that need to be pursued, things like tiered payment rights, separation of authorities, restrictions on cash, requiring dual sign-offs on contracts. It really kind of gets to the heart of what an organization needs to do to prevent bribery within its system. It's a very key set of requirements. There's also requirements related to what the standard refers to as controlled organizations, business associates. And the expectation is that you're going to flow down your ABMS controls to those external providers. Now, the 37001 standard gives an explanation for what they mean by a controlled organization. This is any organization that the certified company has control over, if they directly or indirectly control the management of the organization. So, that's a little bit different, obviously, than a supplier or such, a controlled organization. So it's a very specific group of companies. Gifts, hospitality, and donations are discussed in Section 8.7. Now, this is fairly self-explanatory. Again, we look to Annex A for some guidance on this. And it makes the point that these items aren't forbidden, but they do have to be carefully monitored and controlled. So you're not forbidden from making contributions to a local hospital or whatnot, but these need to be very carefully monitored, very carefully controlled. From there, we transition to detection controls. Now, in this spirit, some of the items we've looked at earlier are viewed as detection controls also, specifically bribery risk assessment and the anti-bribery compliance function. But the big item here is raising concerns, which is discussed in Section 8.9. And this again goes back to this concept of empowerment and protecting your whistleblowers. People need to be able to feel empowered and unafraid to come forward and report what they are perceiving to be an incident of bribery. And from there, in 8.9, it goes on to talk about anonymity, confidential treatment of reported incidents, protections against retaliation, and so forth. So that's the big item as far as detection is 8.9. From there, we transition to response. And for this, really, there's only one primary clause, and it's section 8.10. which talks about investigating and dealing with bribery. So the protocols that are discussed here include the empowerment of the investigators following the a set of steps in the investigation, sharing the results with the anti-bribery compliance function, treating everything confidentially, excuse me. And again, there's quite a bit of guidance on this in Annex A. Now, one of the things that makes ISO 37001 unique amongst the ISO family of standards is it has a lot of procedural requirements, a number of them where, for example, ISO 9001 has no procedure requirements. So for example, you have to have a procedure for employment, for your anti-bribery awareness protocol, for control over controlled organizations, and for business associates, for hospitality, gifts. You have to have a procedure for the reporting and raising concerns, for the response protocol, and for internal audit. Now, as a reminder, the official definition of procedure, this is taken from the ISO 9000 vocabulary standard, is a specified way to carry out an activity or a process. Now, the expected interpretation is that the procedure will be documented. So, indeed, you have to have these nine documented procedures, and they need to cover all of the requirements outlined in those sections. Now, I've already made several references to Annex A of ISO 37001. And I do encourage you, if you're new to ISO 37001, if you're just getting started with it, definitely review Annex A carefully. Because every one of the specified requirements, all the things you're supposed to do, due diligence, financial controls, controls on gifts and hospitality, et cetera, these are all given a thorough explanation in Annex A. So including examples, you know, if you're looking for, well, how should we do this? Examples are provided. So it's a unique standard in terms of trying to provide implementation assistance. Most standards don't do that, and they don't do that by design. Now, obviously, all of the things that are in Annex A are guidance. So if you choose to go a different path, that's fine. It's not a nonconformance if you choose not to follow the guidance. But again, it's helpful guidance. I do encourage you to give it a look. Now, in terms of how we audit the ABMS protocol, our assessment process is layered and it's rooted in a variety of audit techniques. So you should expect a review of the procedures, a review of your contracts, terms and conditions, a lot of review of legal wording in your company documents. We're going to talk to a lot of people. There's going to be an extensive amount of interviews conducted about what they do within the organization and just making sure that those people are aware of the anti-bribery protocols and policies. And the auditor will also review some online items and business filings to determine if the organization has been involved in an alleged act of incident of bribery. Now, we feel there's a number of material and intangible benefits to getting certified to ISO 37001. You can have some assurance to your outside stakeholders that you take business ethics seriously and that you're working to promote a culture of honesty and trustworthiness. You can use this as a means of selecting reliable partners in regions or industries that have a reputation for bribery and corruption, whether that's a deserved reputation or not. It's been shown to lead to cost reductions in some cases. It can demonstrate a prevention of conflict of interest. And if you are involved in an alleged bribery incident, You can use the resources that the system gives you for information in the event that you're being investigated. I feel that ISO 37001 is an intriguing standard, and we feel it has the potential to make a real difference in the world of commerce. We do hope that the points of our presentation today will help you consider the benefits of pursuing ISO 37001 and that you will consider PJR for your registrar. As of this month, we are still the only USA headquartered certification body to achieve ANAB accreditation for ISO 37001. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We have a very popular presentation on the interaction of processes and its importance to a successful audit. This is seen on a semi-annual basis. We also have a presentation on exemptions and what can and cannot be excluded in an audit assessment. And we have presentations on lots of other topics, stage one audits, ISO 9001, corrective action, and so forth. The best way for you to be kept informed of the latest news automatically is to go to our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for future updates automatically on things like upcoming webinars, new standards, and other points of information. I do thank you for your time and attention. At this time, I'll unlock the question portion of the dashboard if anybody has questions. Tim Lyons asks, how long are the audits compared to a recert audit for ISO or ITF or ISO 14001? Great question. Tim, obviously, the audits are rooted in headcount, but the time calculation is a little bit different because it is not rooted in the IAF MD5 standard. So in some cases, for a larger company, this might mean that the audit may be shorter. For a smaller company, it may mean that the audit is going to be longer. So if we need to do an audit time calculation for your organization, certainly reach out to us and we'll be glad to accommodate you. Any other questions today? Okay, well, I do wish all of you a great day. Thank you very much.